Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is February 16th, 2017. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz. I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Events, lots coming up. First of all, I want to mention the PDF for the wrap-up is going to be available early next week. It's really terrific, particularly, well, there's so many good parts, but I really want you to work through the scenarios and how they apply to you. The flipbook should be ready by the end of the week and then the hardcover the following week, so please make sure you access this. It's a wonderful tool. It's got many resources. It's got a complete list of all the movies and documentaries we've recommended since Let's Go to the Movie started. We have a great list of food documentaries in the food section, and then best books for 2017, and of course, just great scenarios and ideas to help you in 2017. We hope you like it. Lunch in Toronto for Toronto subscribers. I'll be up at the PDAC conference, and Rob Kirby of Kirby Analytics is going to join me for lunch. And we have Nick Barashev and his colleague Mark Farmer from BMG Bullion coming as well. So lots of very interesting discussion, I'm sure. And then we have, of course, the crowdfund. We've now ordered the phase one part of the Oregon. We're very, very excited about it. And to celebrate, we're going to have lunch in Louisville on May 13th. You can, that's now mailed out to all the, not just the donors, but we put it on the update list. So please check that out on the website. So that's for donors or subscribers. Early April, I'm going to be in the Netherlands. So I'm there working on a webinar series that we're doing with the sponsors of Breakthrough Energy and Secret Space Program. So stay tuned for more. April 20th. I'm going to be speaking in California. We're going to try and organize an event the day before or the following 2 days, and I'll keep you posted when I have it. And finally, Australia, May 2018. We've emailed the link to sign up for that trip with myself, Richard Dolan, and Jason Bawden-Smith, May 2018, to the Australian Outback. The trip's limited to 20 spots, and we've now reserved 13, so there's 7 still available if you're interested. We're just going to keep it to those who've expressed interest this week, and then we'll mail it out to all subscribers next week. And then finally, we still have prayer books, so email, call, or send a self-addressed stamped envelope to our P.O. Box, and we'll send you one back. They're free. Our theme tonight, as I said, for the first quarter, I think we're going to be very Washington-centric because the whole global economy works off the U.S. federal budget at this point. Unfortunately, it's that centralized. And so what's going on in Washington and the changes upon us affect us all. Our theme tonight is the Royal Bushkegee. If you don't know what the Bushkegee is, there are several movies that were filmed in or about Afghanistan. One is The Horseman with Omar Sharif. The second is there's a great Bushkegee scene in Rambo 3. The Royal Bushkegee is the Bushkegee played with the championships of across Afghanistan come in and would play under the sponsorship of the king. That's why they called it the Royal Bushkegee. But it's a forerunner to polo. Two teams on horses fight for or compete for the body of a dead lamb. And the goal, if you get the body of the dead lamb, is to carry it around the opposing team's goal and or goal post at the end of the field. And everybody carries whips, and the goal of the team, the opposing team, is to whip you till you can't stand the pain anymore, and you drop the body of the dead lamb, and they get to pick it up, and then it, you know, then the other team gets to whip them until they can't stand the pain and drop it. And if you look at what's going on in Washington, it's literally a Bushkegee. Our greatest problem is we have a significant number of players, not just in Washington, but throughout the whole country, and it's a serious cultural problem. They've been so used to living in a world of cheap money provided by fiat currency and easy debt that they don't have any kind of awareness or commitment to the whole. It's just, you know, it's one pastor once said that everybody in America wakes up and goes around their business all day saying, what about me? What about me? What about me? But literally, they're focused on just enhancing their power. And it's very difficult to see what's going on because there's so many different things happening at once. You need to unpack it, and that's what we're going to do tonight. One very astute subscriber tonight said it's like a cat fight. There's so much fur flying, you can't see what's going on. But the biggest threat in all of this is a real culture of irresponsibility and a refusal to share a common commitment to the to making America great again and to responsibility towards the whole. It was really embarrassing to have the Japanese leadership here. Abe was proposing a bullet train from New York to D.C. while American politicians were proposing special prosecutors, investigations, and leaks. And that's the culture of engineers, you know, and Trump's a real estate builder, so I think he gets along better with engineers. But if we were a healthy country, we'd be having a big war in Washington about whether we build a bullet train from New York to D.C. or from New York to San Francisco. So, you know, that's what we should be competing about, which is really how do we make the pie bigger and how do we make money doing things that make the pie bigger, as opposed to nuclear wars against each other. Part of the problem, absolutely, is there are way too many lawyers. And interestingly enough, Trump's not hiring a lot of them. He's bringing in business people, generals, and lots of doers as opposed to lots of lawyers. Anyway, so I want to break down the different things. Let's push away the cat fur that's flying and take a look at what the cats are up to. Number one, has the intelligence community declared war? It's very important to understand there are many, many different intelligence agencies. They have huge budgets. There are hundreds of thousands of people involved. And the notion that there is the intelligence community and the entire intelligence community has declared war against the administration is complete yah-yah. If you look at what the evidence is that there is the intelligence agency has quote-unquote declared war, you have a handful of leakers leaking into the New York Times, Washington Post, and some of the other media. You've got a few bloggers. Everybody's quoting unnamed sources. So that's far from evidence. Now, what there is are there leaks that if they are provided by government agencies, these are very serious leaks. They are leaks which constitute felony, may even constitute treason. But it only takes a few people to do that. And frankly, I believe that there are foreign intelligence agencies and private companies that have the capacity to access that information and leak that information as well. So I would be very careful to presume that there's a quote-unquote war. It wouldn't surprise me if a handful of people are trying to start one, but that doesn't mean it exists. Now, clearly the thing that has triggered it is there is blood in the water. If you listen to my USA Watchdog interview, what I said is what the opposing team would try and do. You know, of course, they're trying to get Trump to drop the body of the dead lamb. And the first thing you do is take out the lieutenants, because the lieutenants are the people who are protecting you from getting whipped. So rather than whip the principal, you whip their lieutenants until you can break through and finally whip them. Flynn was fired by Trump. And it started with him speaking with the Russian ambassador when he was essentially working for the transition team, expecting to go in as the national security advisor. Now, if you look at what we can discern, he said, we don't have the transcripts public, which is too bad. But it doesn't look to me like he did anything wrong whatsoever. And the ambassador brought up the sanctions. And if you look at what he said, he basically, it looks like he said what anybody would say to be polite, but defer it until after the administration was in place. Again, you know, it'd be useful to have the transcripts. The number one problem is that Sally Yates, who was the acting attorney general, was a holdover from Obama, started an FBI investigation, which is really dirty poker. Because if you look at what Flynn did, it certainly didn't, it certainly wasn't illegal and it certainly wasn't inappropriate. And for Yates to do that is just, this is why you don't let people like that stay in place after the turnover. Better to have somebody lower in the chain of command running the place than allow someone like that. And the problem is once you get an FBI investigation going, it's, you know, it goes for a while, and certainly the president can't stop it because that would be interference with enforcement. Now, there's an intimation that Flynn lied, and that's the old Henry Cineris trick. That's how they got Cineris. You investigate for something that is not a felony or illegal, and then you try and trick somebody into a lie related to that, and then you say that they created a felony in the process of falsifying information in the interview. So you take something that's not a felony and you turn it into one. It's a very subtle and dirty trick. I would be surprised if the FBI was doing that, but somebody's trying to intimate that that is going on. And again, very dirty trick. Now, what happened was, according to the president, that Pence was out defending Flynn and had said Flynn hadn't talked about the sanctions, and it turned out he had. Now, I can easily see, based on what I expect Flynn probably said, why Flynn had initially said he hadn't talked about the sanctions, because basically all he did was defer it. He didn't explore sanctions, is my expectation. Anyway, but that got sloppy, and it may have turned out that Mattis and some of the others didn't think that Flynn was ideal for the National Security Advisor job. The reality is Flynn had a brilliant record as at the tactical level as head of defense intelligence, but the national security job requires different skills. Now, Mattis, or the president, then asked Robert Harwood, who's a retired admiral, now working for Lockheed, to consider taking the national security job. And unfortunately, now he was someone who had worked closely with Mattis. It wouldn't surprise me if Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, had recommended him. But he did get high marks from references that I trust. Anyway, one of the problems appears he wanted to bring in his own people, and the existing deputy at National Security is somebody who wants to, Trump had promised to stay. So there's an issue about appointing his own people. The leaks are a real problem, and it's very important for the administration, if they can, to determine what they were. There's a big question about, are they as bad as the Wikipedia leaks? The Wikipedia leaks on the campaign were of private citizens, of Podesta and people in the media. It wasn't of a government official, which is a whole different kettle of fish. Now, Flynn was just representing the transition team. So technically you could say that he was a private citizen, but I consider that to be very different. And then the leaks on the president's interviews with and telephone conversations with leaders around the world, that is a very serious violation of the law, including felonies, including possibly treason. And for the New York Times and Washington Post and the press to play along with that is frightening. Now, it's, as I said, it's not necessarily U.S. intelligence. It could be British. It could be foreign. It could be telcos. They're a combination of different things. Now, let me tell you what the biggest problem is here. The biggest problem isn't that Flynn has resigned. The biggest problem, it's not that you have a war with intelligence agencies. Again, there's no evidence of who is on the other side of this war. I would say the biggest problem is you, it's funny, last in the interview with USA Watchdog that got posted last weekend, I called it The Empire Strikes Back. And this week I'm going to change my terminology and say it's The Swamp Strikes Back. Because I think the biggest problem is projective identification. Projective identification is when you attack somebody for what they're doing. So if I'm engaged in a certain kind of environmental pollution, I attack my enemy for that very environmental pollution on the theory that I'm afraid they're going to attack me about that. And if I attack them, then when they attack me, I can say, oh, well, you're just doing that because, you know, you're doing it. So it's a kind of going on the offense when you have reason to be on the defense. And if you look at who has reason to be on the defense, it's whoever is compromised by the 650,000 emails in Anthony Weiner's laptop. So you have Clintons and their pals doing very despicable foreign deals, in the scores of foreign deals, not a few deals in Russia. I mean, scores of foreign deals, including with Russia. If you look at the uranium deal that Clinton did, stinks to high heaven. My guess is the neocons are helping because they have plenty of stinky foreign deals. It was interesting. After Flynn went down, one person sent out a tweet that referenced Comet Pizza. It says, what goes around, comets around, and then sent a link to where to get a job at Domino Pizza. And then Clinton tweeted that out, making a nasty comment about fake news. It was Clinton really celebrating Flynn going down. And given how Sally Yates basically got this thing going and worked with Clinton-friendly press to cook it up into something, it wouldn't surprise me if it was the Clintonistas crowing about taking Flynn out. If you I tweeted back to Clinton the fact that she was at one, this was on a different subject actually, when she came out and celebrated the loss of the immigration case in the appeals court, she said 3-0, meaning the judges voted 3-0, and I wrote back and said, really, you're 0-2, once to a community organizer who was a senator for a few seconds, once to a casino reality TV executive, here's why, and put a link to Victor Thorne's book on murder, which is a remarkable documentation of the some of the most extraordinary deaths around the Clinton. And it just goes to show you, you know, if you look at who plays on that team, it's a very dirty team, and it's got a long history of very dirty playing. Anyway, I suspect pedophilia is part of the real fear and why the swamp is attacking so hard and fast. We noticed that there have been approximately 700 arrests, plus arrests, including 450 plus in the LA area since Trump has been inaugurated. Now, those are all local police, and they could just be responding to, you know, clearly the shift of the winds of war. But it may also be the local guys shutting off the supply lines that are going up into those networks. It was interesting, Wayne Mattson, who we've had once on the Salieri Report, used to work at NSA, did a very strange presentation, I forget which website it was on, where he said Pizzagate was fake news, but MariaGate was not. That's an allegation that Trump was involved in a Jeffrey Epstein rape of a 12-year-old named Maria. I don't believe it. I don't buy it. Looks to me like Wayne Mattson got squeezed. I've gone through the Pizzagate material enough to know there's something there. And but it's hard to tell what unless we get those 650,000 emails dumped out. What is very real, and you can see it in, if you read my review of the book Trafficking up on the website, Bill Clinton's trips and involvement to the Epstein's Island Resort and on the plane look pretty serious. One of the other tactics that Swamp was trying this week was that Manafort and Stone had, Paul Manafort worked for a short time as Trump's campaign manager, and Stone had helped him a little bit as staff in the beginning of the campaign, and they were long gone by August of 2006. Now, Manafort had worked as a consultant with folks in the Ukraine and Eastern Europe and obviously made phone calls there. So they're trying to stitch that together with somehow Trump was working with Russian intelligence. You know, you can try and cook all that up as much as you want, but the reality is, you know, a lot of people do business all over the globe. Trump certainly does business all over the globe, including in Russian, huge amounts of Russian capital have come into this country since 1996, or particularly in the 90s. You know, everybody's connected to everyone, but it doesn't have anything to do with the Russians being involved in helping Trump's campaign. The problem with Flynn's resignation is once you take out one person, it's blood in the water and the sharks get emboldened, and they're going to just keep trying to take out the next and the next and the next and the next. And you can't let them get away with that. you can't let the swarm grow. And the other thing is, you need all of Washington to see you penalize the people who play that way. So you can't let the nest grow, and but you also have to go at it with a rifle, not a shotgun, because you don't want to hit and splatter a lot of parts of the deep state and the intelligence community that haven't done anything wrong. It's very important to play what I call tit for tat, which is always be a cooperator, but if anybody strikes, you're going to have to strike back hard, because if others don't see you do that, then they're going to join the swarm. The question is, who's going to win? And if the more the swarm looks like it's winning and growing, they're going to jump in. I wanted to read one quote from Eli Lake's piece on the assassination of Mike Flynn that goes into this. In normal times, the idea that U.S. officials entrusted with our most sensitive secrets would selectively disclose them to undermine the White House would alarm those worried about creeping authoritarianism. Imagine if intercepts of a call between Obama's incoming national security advisor and Iran's foreign minister leaked to the press before the nuclear negotiations began. The howls of indignation would be deafening. In the end, it was Trump's decision to cut Flynn loose. In doing this, he caved into his political and bureaucratic opposition. Nunes told me Monday night that this will not end well. First it's Flynn, next it will be Kellyanne Conway, then it will be Steve Bannon, then it will be Reince Priebus, he said. Put another way, Flynn is only the appetizer. Trump is the entree. And it's true, the swamp is going after Trump. So this one didn't get handled well. Now, let's keep going. One of the tactics the swamp is using, and it's very important to understand this when you watch all this stuff flying, is what I call spectral evidence. Spectral evidence was used in the Salem witch trial, and spectral evidence refers, let me read the quote from Wikipedia, refers to a witness testimony that the accused person's spirit or spectral shape appeared in his or to her, him or her witness in a dream at the time the accused person's physical body was in another location. It was accepted in the courts during the Salem witch trials. So if I say that your ghost was in my bedroom on Saturday night, you're called upon to prove that it wasn't. Well, you can't. How can you do it? And what we're watching is Trump and his team are being called on to prove that something is not true when there's no evidence whatsoever that it is true, just innuendo and unnamed leaks. We see now the New York Times puts a special investigative unit together to investigate Trump and his family and their finances. Now you combine that with a few leakers who are going to throw unending dirt and mud that constitutes spectral evidence, and what you're going to create is Chinese water torture that generates 50 to 100,000 hours of staff time to manage and respond to over a 4-year presidential term. Now, I know a lot about this because I was on the other side of one of these efforts. I had just an unending attack of allegations made in the media against me, all of which were based totally on spectral evidence. And when I started to talk to reporters about it, one reporter from the Washington Post told me that the mailings they had received from the so-called whistleblower would fill a small room from floor to 2/3 of the ceiling. That was how many. They had literally gotten millions of pages of mailings, and they went out to visit the whistleblower's office, and they said they had 17 people working full time doing database management, printing out documents, and mailings to press. And their impression at the Post was that they were one of 20 plus reporting teams who had gotten these mailings. So you're talking about literally, tens of millions of pages of documents. Anyway, but it was a massive effort to just throw mud up on a wall and start a swarm, even though they had not one shred of evidence. And of course, the plan was you get investigations going and they'll find something. They'll find a parking ticket. And the part of the problem is they could never find anything. So they tried falsifying things, and then we caught them at that. It's very interesting. Over an 11-year period, I estimated that the government cost alone of all these different efforts in the courts, in investigations, was over $45 million just for this one mess. It's a huge job program. Cost me and my company $6 million in 11 years of my time. So just dealing with spectral evidence, it's a huge, huge, shadow work job. Anyway, so what Trump is going to need to do, Because the way he wins is to focus on Make America Great Again and leave his main team free to focus on that. So what he's going to need to do is create a special team to deal with fake news, because you're going to have fake news war games going on for quite some time. He needs a combination of the communication staff and one or more people from White House counsel who are just dedicated full time. This has to be a professional effort. You have to have databases. You have to have space. You have to have an office. You have to maintain chronologies and all sorts of templates for fast and speedy response. But you're going to have to play fake news war games on, you know, it's going to, they'll start on Russia, but they'll go into the Trump family finances. So wherever the Trump family has money or property, that's where it might go. And this is going to cost the taxpayers a lot of money. But Trump needs to basically set up a special team to just handle the war games, because you can't let the main team get buried or unfocused. They need to focus on Make America Great. So very strong recommendation there. What looks to me, unfortunately, if you look at who's playing this game, both at the Washington Post and the New York Times, it looks like it's not just Clinton plus the neocons. My guess is that somebody more powerful like Gates may be backing it. And that's why you have to gear up and staff up now for a serious counter, because you've let them take out one of your important players, and of course they're coming for checkmate, so you can't let that happen. You've got to go back hard. You got to be good at defense. Ultimately, again, you're going to have to be good at offense, both on the war games part, but the most important part is it's critical to leave the main team free to focus on Make America Great Again. That means tax reform, regulatory relief, Obamacare, infrastructure, and reengineering the federal budget, all things hard to do. Luckily, this week, we see Mnuchin and Mulvaney, who's the OMB appointee. So now Treasury and OMB are really what you need to do those things. So those players have not gotten approved, and you've been holding those players up, really keeping the Trump team stuck in the mud without them. It was interesting. McCain came out against Mulvaney, and it looks to me like McCain may be working with Clinton in the rat's nest. So one of the most important things Trump's going to have to do is whatever the ramifications are of prosecutions on that 650,000 emails. He's going to have to really figure out who's in the swamp nest and who's striking from the swamp. And again, rifle shot, he's going to have to hold them accountable and get rid of them. Okay, next point, presidency as an entry-level position. I said last year one of the most astute comments and one of the reasons in the primary I voted for Kucinich, not Trump, is that the presidency is not an entry-level position, and part of what we're watching is somebody who has no government experience having to learn government in the presidency as an entry-level position. Painful for us, painful for him, painful for his team, I'm sure. He's going to have to learn how to be good at process. You know, government, he's not a CEO. He's leading in a matrix structure. And he doesn't have the power to hire and fire. He's dealing with a bureaucracy that was there before he got there and is going to be there before he goes. And he's got to figure out how to work with them and lead them in a way that is mutually energizing. It can be done and he can do it, but he's got to learn how to be good at it. He's also got to be good at internal communication and decision-making flow on his team. See a couple of really not necessary painful things happen. He could have arranged, or the team could have arranged, greater help for the labor nominee. His nominee for Secretary of Labor pulled out this week, and one of the things they noted was the abusive process and the extent to which Washington has just become the royal Bushkegee. The second is Robert Harwood, who he asked to replace Flynn. The response, the sort of ask and response, was not handled quietly and without leaks. The one thing that happened this week that was almost a fatal error, and I tweeted about it saying immediately it was a fatal error, was the New York Times wrote a story that Feinberg, who's the head of a private equity company that is the lead investor in DynCorp, was going to come in as an advisor and help him oversee and re-engineer the intelligence community. DynCorp is basically a company that runs mercenary armies. It's the equivalent of asking a private mercenary to come in and oversee the re-engineering of a government intelligence agency. If I was the career civil service, I would go absolutely ballistic. It's a terrible, it would be political suicide and something that the absolutely best and brightest in the civil service, if I were them, I would be wildly concerned and opposed. I mean, the conflicts of interest are off the charts, particularly because DynCorp just lost a huge contract at State Department and is in serious litigation with the federal government last time I looked. So luckily, Trump announced at his press conference later this week that Coates and the other professionals already in the administration would deal with the oversight of the intelligence agencies and scope of work, and that no one from outside would be brought in. So that was a big save. How that rumor got going was pretty concerning. Anyway, so whether it was the Labor nominee pulling out, the Harwood ask and response, or the allegations swirling about Feinberg, these were all things in a well-managed team that wouldn't have happened or could have been avoided. So it's very important that you know, that Trump learn and Trump's team learn how to manage the process better. The other thing is that Trump continues to attack unnecessarily. Here's the thing: if you are a New York real estate developer, you're dealing with a certain amount of power. If you're the president of the United States, your power is much greater, and it takes a lot less when you're operating with a much higher voltage of power behind you. Something that wouldn't hurt people's feelings before suddenly terrorizes them. So, you know, he's dealing with a much greater electricity voltage than he was before, and he's got to learn that he... when you're wielding that much power, you need far less impact to get the result you're looking for. So he's just got to learn how to do that. The other thing he's going to have to learn is a thicker skin, because when you're playing in the Royal Bushkegee, they're just trying to get you to drop the body of the dead lamb, and there's no fairness. You're on a rubber life raft and people going at each other with razor blades. These people are scorpions. When you're a CEO dealing with people in a marketplace who all want to make money, you're fighting with piggies. And they can fight dirty, but it's different than fighting with scorpions, because scorpions will commit suicide and take the whole world down with them. And he's not used to that kind of fight. And it's shocking to him. And as he's been working very, very long hours, getting overtired. So it's a long distance run, and he's going to have to dig in and start to learn how to play to win, including when you have to deal with scorpions. And you certainly can't care what scorpions say about you, because they're never going to be fair. They're never going to be decent. It's just not their way. Now, if you let the swarm grow and you don't take out the nest, they can falsify your way into prison or assassinate you. So he's got to take steps to take out the nest, but it's got to be a rifle shot. He's got to make sure he knows who's really doing this. He needs very good intel on who's doing this and how they're doing it. Now, a few words about the alternative media. The alternative media needs to calm down and be helpful. Stop shrieking for perfection. There've been the military-industrial complex grinds on, and it is unreasonable to think that Trump can turn everything on a dime day one, or that he has that kind of power or control. He doesn't. This is a very powerful military-industrial complex, and if we're going to help that team turn anything, then we're just, you know, they're working within a certain system, we're working within the system. Trump and his team are only a handful of people. The corruption is widespread throughout DC and the general population. And, you know, and that team's going to make mistakes. We're not going to agree on everything all the time. So we need to do everything we can to turn the Titanic in our own communities or in our own lives. And we need to help the team in Washington who wants to turn the Titanic do that. And we need to have some common patience. Again, this is a long distance run. It's not a sprint, and perfectionism won't work. Our big risks right now are, as I've said before, constitutional convention. I put up a quote from Greenspan. Greenspan is all over the news saying what we've got to do is get control of entitlements. Notice he didn't say anything about getting the over what's now over $50 trillion of missing money back, including the amount that's in his personal pocketbook. You know, he's got a lot of money in his bank accounts. That's quite amazing. You wonder where it all came from. Now, it's important to remember, no matter how many mistakes the current team and Trump make, Clinton would have been much worse. Whatever we believe on that score, he's the president. So, among other things, he's pro-human, and we need every pro-human person we can get. It's very unique that a financially independent person who wants a pro-human country would be willing to do what he's doing. So we should try and help him to succeed and judge his performance in a much longer term view of things. It's interesting, he met with teachers with DeVos. There was a meeting with teachers, and he asked them about whether or not they're seeing more autism, had a group of questions about autism. It was very interesting. A quote from A. Philip Randolph, which is on the statue of Randolph in Union Station. Let me just read it to you. At the banquet table of nature, there are no reserve seats. You get what you can take, and you keep what you can hold. If you can't take anything, you won't get anything. And if you can't hold anything, you won't keep anything. And you can't take anything without organization. So what the Trump Make America Great Team needs is it needs a team. And that means taking this group of people that include an extraordinary number of very talented people who are taking big risks to come into the administration. It means turning them into an organization that is effective within a matrix structure in a hostile environment. That's what needs to be done. And to do that, he's going to need to create another team that is going to handle the Russia fake news scandal, whatever war games the nest plays. And he's going to have to figure out with that team how to take out that nest as well. So what should you do? The media is trying to get attention with drama. So we note that the New York Times stock is now up 15% since February 2nd when the war on Flynn really got going. Now, is it because of that or other things? I suspect the war on Flynn got them a lot of hits and a lot of views and et cetera. And who knows what deals they made behind the scene. It's interesting, if you look at the cable news ratings that just came out on February 14th this week, we see Fox with the first four spots and then the sixth spot, and way ahead of everybody else. CNN down really low. And if you look at a variety of different players, MSNBC Maddow, Rachel Maddow, I watched one of her shows this week, and I've never seen a more disgusting, hypocritical, shallow, false. I mean, it was just unbelievable. So, I don't watch her closely, but I would not have expected her to do something as baseless as that. And I think what's happening is everybody's just deciding anything goes. You know, or as they see this swarm going, they just go with it. I can't explain it, but it's, you know, within, if you look at the ratings within the group, there's some legitimate and decent people, and there's some other people who, on both sides, who just do whatever they can to get attention. Anyway, what you and I need to do is we need to be Titanic turners. If we're going to turn the Titanic, it's got to take everybody. there's no way a group of people, Washington, can do this. All the solutions, or many of the solutions, are outside of Washington. So I republished my letter to my congressman last year on the place-based data. So if you feel like doing something, get a copy of that and send it to your Congress critter, because that's one thing we could get Washington to do, is make the data much more accessible and start looking for opportunities to rebuild the economy and create jobs locally. There's so many jobs that could be created if we could re-engineer the money bottom up and start to let equity flow in communities. So you could even talk to local leaders about participatory budgeting. What I would say is check out the list of suggestions in the wrap-up, look at the scenarios in the wrap-up, and start thinking creatively about where the opportunities for you to turn the Titanic in a way that make you money or save you time or give you energy where you are. Again, everybody's unique. Money in markets. The U.S. dollar is back up above 100, but it's still down almost 2% for the year. So we're just above 100 for a tad. It's clear Trump knows the business community does not want the dollar flying up. It's not good for exports. The Fed meeting is on March 15th and 16th, and Yellen has been implying she's going to raise rates another 25 basis points. So I'm holding off before buying anything that might get slaughtered by interest rates. We'll just have to see what happens. The intimation is that the economy is doing really well, but if you look at all the official realities on how great the economy is doing versus what I'm seeing, I don't see it, but maybe I'm missing something. Fixed income, the long treasury now up 62 basis points for the year. That's 0.62%, so a little bit less than 1%. The intermediate treasury, 5 to 7 years, now up 24 basis points for the year, 0.24%. And the corporate bond aggregate ETF now up 26 basis points. Junk still flying at 1.83%. The S&P now up 5.01% this year. Who would have thought? And the home builders up 4.52%. Close along. Europe up 4.48%. And Germany now up 4.38%. That's the ETF. And then the developed world minus North America is up 5.08%. China's still doing well on all their stimulus and local lending. They're up 11.61%. The large caps and the small caps up 10.46%. And the emerging markets doing well, 10.11%. Commodities flat for the year, and gold up strong, 7.73%, and silver ETF up 13.5%. Oil still down, minus 3%. The European elections continue to get more interesting. Le Pen and Wilders in France and Netherlands pulling ahead. Lafarge had another hissy fit in the EU Parliament, which we put up on the website, pointing out that Chatham House did a new survey of 10 European countries that indicated 55% of Europeans do not want more. They want Muslim immigration stopped. 25% were undecided. A little bit more than 20% supported more Muslim immigration. But he said, you know, look, you got to listen to the voters. He said, you're not listening. And it's very interesting. He, for once, he didn't get booed. I would say there's a serious inflation story. I said this last year. We had Charles Hugh Smith, who came on and said it was running at 7%. But you're seeing more and more business news indicating clearly that inflation is rising. Now, it's interesting. John Williams at Chatham says it's mostly gasoline that's driving the consumer price statistics up. If you look at my household budget, what I'm seeing at the grocery store and household maintenance of many different kinds, I don't think it's just gasoline at all, but I think it's very important that we're all prepared to deal with 7 to 9% inflation across the board this year. So just be prepared for that. As I said, I wanted to mention again, I had the open letter to my congressman that I published last year. I republished it this week. And I would really encourage you to, if you can, print that off and send it to your Congress critter, because we have to get the discussion moving out of the Beltway and back into the local communities, and that'll help. We also put a special report that I had my attorney do on the FBAR, the Foreign Asset Reporting Requirements update. For the 2016 year, it's important for you to know that the filing date has been moved from June 30 to April 15th. So this is for anybody who would have an account like a gold money account, any foreign investment or bank account, including precious metals, where you can, where it's liquid, where you can transfer. Now, if it's in a safe deposit box in another country, I don't think that that has to be reported, but I would defer to your CPA. Anyway, all the details are up there. It's called Solaria Special Report Foreign Asset Reporting Requirements Update. And if you have accounts abroad, it's very, very important that you get that filing right. The Norway Sovereign Wealth Fund is increasing its equities from 60 to 70%. That's very interesting. And I think part of this effort of getting yield is pushing people out of fixed income into equities for now, even with interest rates going up a little bit. The Aetna CEO says Obamacare is in a death spiral. I was like, whoa. CEOs of very large companies usually don't use terms like that, but clearly you can't get into political problem these days for saying it, but it is true. And it's going to be interesting to see how Congress responds, because clearly something is going to have to be done. Signal from the IRS that they, in response to Trump's executive order, they're not going to implement the fining of people who didn't get health care. And I know that's going to be a relief to a lot of people who were still struggling with health care and the premiums and the prices. New court decision that's up on the website out of Marcola's site about a California Superior Court judge struck down Monsanto's attempt to overturn California's ruling to require Proposition 65 warnings and glyphosate, where it says, they showed one picture of it, warning this product may contain a chemical known to the state of California to cause cancer or birth defects or other reproductive harm. You've got to put it on Roundup. And I sent it to one of my allies who's always interested in development foods. He says, great, now if we could just label Congress, the judiciary, all federal regulatory and enforcement agencies, and the intelligent financial military academic secret society matrix with this warning, that would really be progress. And under the title, Well, We're All Conspiracy Theorists Now, the mayor of Ankara, Turkey, announced that earthquake weapons were being tested on Turkey. I love it. It's taken 20 years, but it looks like at least some politicians are willing to discuss disaster and weather weapons and how they're being blackmailed. Speaking of disaster capitalism, Trump met with Netanyahu this week, and they seem to have quite a successful meeting. I think Trump had a lot of fun with Abe, and now he's having fun with Netanyahu. It's just Americans who are he's struggling with. The United States has backed away from two-state solutions, which pulls a big rug out from under the Palestinians. That, to me, it's a sad thing. Later, or during the meeting, Netanyahu did an interview with Sean Hannity, and I put it up on his site. It's very interesting. He was talking about how the Iran deal had moved Israel closer to its Arab neighbors, all of whom are becoming more and more afraid of radical Islam of the kind that's in Iran and, of course, ISIL. So, I thought that was interesting to hear his comments on that. And so you might be interested in take a look at it on the website. Our hero this week is Titanic Turner's Dennis Kucinich did a great interview about how dangerous the whole brouhaha about Russia is. And Piers Morgan did another great interview on the same topic. And then you're also seeing people, strong hands who've come into the administration who I think are trying to really help and get the thing going in the right direction. I don't always agree with them on every topic, but I think they're the ones who probably got the Feinberg idea next. And that's Pence, Mattis, Tillerson, Coates. So we see the Titanic Turners continually working to protect the country from the swamp and try and make sure that reason prevails. It's interesting Kucinich and Piers Morgan have traditionally been on the Democratic or the progressive or liberal side, but they're watching what's going on and objecting to it as much as people on the Republican conservative side. The world is dividing up with people who are Titanic Turners and piggies and scorpions. And the piggies and scorpions are in both parties, and the Titanic Turners are both parties. And it's almost like we have to throw, you know, Trump is the guy who comes in and throws the cards up, and hopefully the Titanic Turners of all different backgrounds and parties can come together and get the piggies to come on over to the Titanic turning side, and we'll just have to put the scorpions in jail. Anyway, so it's a reminder this week that we all have to be Titanic Turners, because it's remarkable when you see an interview by someone like Kucinich or a Piers Morgan that makes total sense. You just calm down and think, ah, you know, the world can make sense again and things can work. And let's go to the movies. We had I love the BBC documentaries. I'm a great BBC fan. And there was so I used the BBC documentary from the Great Composer series on Johann Sebastian Bach. And of course, our interview is with Dr. Michael Linton, who is a remarkable scholar and composer and entrepreneur. He's got a wonderful music company, Refiner's Fire. And I strongly recommend you check out their website. They're publishing new fantastic music in the very high, very much the spirit of Bach, that quality. But a remarkable man. He knows a lot about Soleri and the Soleri archive. He's been an ally for many, many years and helped us at one point, getting great guests and supporting us in a variety of different really ways. He's absolutely brilliant. Because he's such a top expert on Bach, and we've had so many subscribers because of our music and the crowdfund express an interest. And I really believe I don't know anything better than Bach to that's a better anecdote for cultural or mental debasement. I listen to a lot of Bach, and it really rejuvenates and restores me. Anyway, but it was a fascinating conversation. And I've learned, thanks to Dr. Joseph Farrell, a tremendous amount about Bach's life. And he's really a remarkable person. It's almost as though he wanted to compose invitations to show us what higher civilization looked like. We live in such a primitive culture and such a primitive civilization. But it's as though Bach's response to that was, and he was a man of enormous faith, was simply to invite us into something that would show us, it would give us a vision, a picture of what a higher mind and a higher civilization could be. And so when you listen to Bach, you go visit to almost like a parallel world of what could be. And it's funny, one of the quote I put up in the commentary from Bach is, "The aim and final end of all music should be none other than the glory of God and the refreshment of the soul." And boy, does Bach deliver in spades. Dr. Linton provided us with a great list of links, and you can link to it from your subscriber links. But sort of the best of Bach in all his different areas of compositions, linking to things all over the web, and so lots of amazing Bach available to you through the internet through those links. So check those links out, because I think they'll give you a lot of listening pleasure. Okay, ask Catherine. Hi, Catherine. Do you agree with Saker that the neocons in the deep state have neutered the Trump presidency? It's over, folks. What exactly does this mean to the average U.S. citizen? Is Obama staging a comeback? Do the Democrats think they can regain power by force? It's not over, but it was a bad hit. Now, it's a hit that the team can recover from, but they're going to have to get a series of things right, as I described in the first part of this Money in Markets. And if they don't get those things right, this swarm could grow and grow and grow and take Trump out. As I said in Money and Markets, he's going to have to ultimately take the nest out. One, he's got to play good defense. He can't let them grow. But two, he's got to take offense, and he's got to take them out. I've heard you speak several times about the Constitution being a covenant, and we need to enforce it and get back the trillions of dollars that have disappeared from the federal government. We are actively working to stop an Article 5 convention resolution in the Utah state legislature. How can we stop the states from making such a mistake? Most legislators do not understand nullification. So do you have realistic and workable ideas that legislators can quickly understand on how to enforce the Constitution? In addition, that is, to giving Trump time to turn things around. I will write something by early next week for you. I think this is important, and I agree. So I will go to work and write something, and you will hear something from me by the and I will certainly make sure it's free on Solari.com. Someone else wrote about alluding to Promise Software. Promise Software is spelled P-R-O-M-I-S, Promise Software. You can learn a lot more about it by reading Black Money by Michael Thomas, or any links on the website will, both on the website and on the internet. There's a piece I wrote many years ago called The Data Beast, and that might help you as well. Hello, Catherine. I heard you mention recently you may be coming out to Australia in 2018 with Richard Dolan. Could you please add this email address to your list of people to be updated regularly? Even if I can't attend, it would be nice to know when you were in the same country as me. Thanks. Well, I'll be in Australia, hopefully, this year as well. If you have time to spare, you may be interested. And then he sends a link that I'm going to take a look at. Tor, Darknest, largest web hosting server hacked and dumped on the web, includes many pedophilia sites, and web hosting client information may have .gov. Many have .gov emails, unclear yet what they were using the hosting for. So more links, information. Again, as I talked about with John Rappaport and on USA Watchdog, I think the likelihood of a major pedophilia scandal this year is 50% or better. I would note there has been regular emails from CIA Vault or from WikiLeaks talking about CIA Vault 7. In fact, they dumped out lots of leaks, and these are clearly felonies. Someone in U.S. government, or it's being hacked, but it's leaks from the U.S. government about CIA interference in the French elections in 2012, or monitoring, maybe interference. I don't want to define exactly what the CIA did or did not do, but it's. I think it's not an accident that the Nest is blaming Russia for interfering in the U.S. elections, and we see Grassley give interviews about, you know, scores of CIA interference in foreign elections, and now we have documents dumping out on CIA involvement in the French elections in 2012. WikiLeaks did this in anticipation of what they say, dumping out Vault 7 and CIA Vault 7, and they keep sending out hints about what Vault 7 is. So everybody is waiting, because we also know that there's a concern that after the Ecuadorian elections that Assange will be asked to leave the Ecuadorian embassy in London, which means he could be arrested by the Brits. So the question is CIA Vault 7 coming before that happens anyway? So something may be exciting from WikiLeaks in the next 3 days. Next question. Thanks to the Solari team and guests for consistently insightful analysis. And then the author goes on to talk about what is happening with promotion of cities and the Strong Cities Network. I won't read the whole question. I am hoping to do a Solari report this year on megacities. I would note that I'm very concerned that these and other efforts like them are designed to pull the U.S. apart, and I'm not interested in either constitutional conventions or secession. You noticed Eric Holder turning up in California last week in a way that really concerns me. Anyway, but the goal of that is to get out of the contracts at the national level, the pension funds, the Social Security, the Medicare, and much worse. And I think it is a terrible mistake to do that. It's the ultimate abrogation of contracts to a wide number of people in the population. And that is not what we need to do. We need to uphold those contracts and more. Gary Heaven said on Dave Hodges' show that he is on the list for ambassadorship of Haiti. I don't know much about Gary other than he produced the movie Amerageddon and is the owner of Curves. He's been in Haiti for quite a while helping the Haitians, spending millions of dollars of his own money. Okay, good to know. Somebody sent in the story of Dr. Jennifer Ashton's ex-husband supposedly killing himself. I don't know much about that. I will say that there's a whole series of deaths that I consider to be very suspicious, including Dan Olmsted from The Age of Autism. And I put the links up on the website, though, so they should be up by tomorrow. I have a question regarding how does the 1% make a profit from the new immigrants? We have to feed them and pay higher prices for our food and medical expenses, plus more property taxes, which retired people find it difficult to afford. Well, you need to differentiate between your money and the 1%. Taxpayers and citizens pay all the costs. The 1% get more revenues in their companies, so they get more purchases, they sell more houses, there are more activities for their corporations, there's cheaper labor, and they get to give out and hand out lots of government grants to not-for-profits who they then control. And they can place these people strategically around the Electoral College, which helps them, you know, sort of engineer the elections the way they want. So you need to understand that spending taxpayers or your money in a way that makes them money, you need to differentiate. You're thinking about money in the U.S. as one pot of money, and that's not true. Getting you and the government to spend lots and lots of money in ways that make them money is very good for their money, especially if those people can help them rig elections and that can help them make even more money. So actually, it can be quite good, particularly if it it also sort of breaks up the culture and makes everybody easier to control. And remember, you know, if you need government to protect you from the other, then there's a reason for government to continue to exist, despite the fact that if you look at your financial relationship with government, you're far worse off for the presence of that government. Anyway, so you need to think, you need to unpack the different pots of money and see how the 1% makes money when, in fact, you and the taxpayer are being drained. Okay, in closing, we have a great discussion with Dr. Laura Thompson on healthcare independence. I was watching people get turned by the system, got very concerned, and I wanted to have a little discussion with Laura about how we help people get savvy at navigating both the holistic health and the traditional health systems. Then March 2nd, Richard Dolan is going to join me to discuss the deep state and Donald Trump and related budget politics. So I wanted to get sort of the black budget view from Richard Dolan on everything going on in Washington. And then March 9th, I'm going to be interviewing with Rob Kirby when I'm up in Toronto about the Exchange Stabilization Fund. If we're going to talk about how the markets meet up with the hidden system of finance and the black budget, it's very important to understand the Exchange Stabilization Fund. So I thought it was time to dive into those nuts and bolts, and Kirby's particularly strong on that and can tie it back to how it relates to the derivatives and the fixed income markets. And with the Fed meeting coming up on March 14th and 15th, it'll be a grand time to talk with him about that. So until next week with Dr. Laura Thompson, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.